You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the at least weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. Today we have Alan Bedding back on the show, and he is not only a statistician, but also a coach. So today you will learn about the role of coaching for your career and your success. And I can assure you this will be an outstanding episode, because I know the power of coaching for myself as a person that was coached. So stay tuned for this great episode. Now, coaching is one way to progress your career. Another way is to attend conferences. And this year we run the third conference of the Effective Statistician in November of 2024. And this completely virtual conference, no travel cost, no accommodation cost, not all these kind of different things, you can attend for a very, very low price or for free if you actually contribute with abstract, well, an abstract for a poster, for a presentation, or for a session with others, or for a workshop. All what you need to do is go to theeffectivestatistician.com, check out the conference page, and submit your abstract to conference@theeffectivestatistician.com. And the sooner you do this, the better for you, because we are planning on doing some great events for those that have already submitted something, an abstract to the conference, and that have been accepted. We accept all the different submissions on a rolling basis because we don't have any space limitations, and so we just look for a certain quality, and if that is met, you are accepted. So very, very different than usual process, but just much more easier. So the earlier you submit, the more benefit you will actually get from being a contributor. And if you just want to passively, well, in a way, passively attend the conference, then check out the conference homepage really, really fast, because then you will get the best price for it. Or maybe you want to convince your organization to sponsor it, and then you get a free slot from the sponsoring deal. So all of that is clarified on the homepage of The Effective Statistician at theeffectivestatistician.com, and check the conference page. Now, as I'm recording this, I'm just back from the PSI conference, which every year is a highlight. Now, if you missed this conference, yeah, that's sad, but next year will be another PSI conference, and I'm sure it will be another great event. Now, there's a lot of other things that are happening around PSI, and I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI. As a member, you can get access to all the video on demand content library, which, by the way, includes lots of sessions from the conference, lots of PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities. Become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. I'm super happy to have Alan Bedding again on the show. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm good, Alexander, and it's good to be back on the podcast. This is my third, I think it's my third appearance. Not as many as some, but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, and today I'm talking to you in a very, very new position, and that is you have started your own coaching business, which is really, really outstanding. How did you get into coaching? What kind of brought you close to that?
Oh, it's a great question. And I've explored this on other podcasts, but I can repeat it here as well. And thank you very much for, I started the coaching company late last year, and carried it over to this year. But what started me in coaching in the first place was about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I went on a leadership course within my company at the time. And the leadership course was all about coaching. There was parts of it that were really heavily into coaching. And I've got to admit, I was absolutely dreadful. I'd done some coaching skills when I was at GSK. And I thought, I can apply some of those. But did I apply them? Not at all. I was giving advice. I was, I can do that for you. Why don't I do this for you? So following on from that course, I had a debrief with one of the observers for the course, and he was a coach. And he said, you need to get some coaching skills. So, and by the way, he became my coach as well. So I, by an interesting connection. In fact, he said, you need some coaching skills and get a coach. So I said, would you become my coach? And he said, yes. So I went on a 2-day coaching skills course, and got to be honest, I loved it. I loved it. It was only using the GROW model, which I don't use anymore, but it was great just to have some of those coaching conversations. And so I thought, I want to do more of this. So I went back and spoke to my manager within Roche, and I asked him, can I go and do the full diploma in coaching? Expecting the no, because I'm not sure this is connected to the business. He actually just turned around and said, what do you need?
Oh, cool.
I need some money. And he said, okay, you've got it. Go ahead and book. And that led me to doing the diploma with the Academy of Executive Coaching. Incidentally, my coach, who was the person that advised me, was one of my tutors as well. So he was a very instrumental part of my coaching journey. And so that led me, I did the diploma, finished the diploma just over four years ago. And from that, I had to get practice coaching clients. I don't call them clients anymore. I call them thinkers. I had to get these practice people in there. So I started coaching people within the organization. Again, found I loved it. And so that just developed more and more to me looking into, what can I do with coaching? How can I learn to be a better coach? And so everything then moved towards just being more of a human coach. And so that's where I see myself now. I've now got over 500 hours worth of coaching, just applying for my professional certified coach credential with the International Coaching Federation. So I got my ACC, the Associate Certified Coach. I got that 2 years ago, and that needs 100 hours of coaching plus other things added on to it. And now I'm applying for my professional certified coach accreditation. So that's my journey. I've also done some team coaching qualifications as well. So I've not just got the qualification within the individual coaching, but also within the team coaching. So this is one of the things my passion towards coaching has grown and grown. And starting my own coaching business, I think was the next step. And so that's one of the things that I just wanted to do that. And I wanted to, I've started coaching external people, and that's led to more and more insights into myself as a coach. So it's a long-winded answer there, Alexander, but I'm hoping that will give the listeners some idea of how I got to where I am.
Yeah, and I think it can also inspire organizations to invest into interested people becoming a coach, because as you said, you invested hundreds of hours into coaching into the organization that actually paid for it. So they got lots of benefits from it back,
And I was going to say, absolutely. And Roche, my former company, have an ICF internal coaching pool. They're not 100% coaches. They do it alongside their day job. But there's over 200 people within that pool of coaches. So Roche puts his money where his mouth is, because it's basically saying we want people to be coaches, and we value coaching. And a lot of this comes back to the VACC leadership. The C part, one of the C's of VACC is obviously coach. So that comes back to why Roche are really, really investing in coaching. And a few years ago, the International Coaching Federation kicked Roche out for some of their coaching activities. Other pharmaceutical companies have had similar sort of awards from the International Coaching Federation.
What does VACC stand for?
Visionary, Architect, Catalyst, and Coach.
Okay. Cool. That's maybe for another episode.
Maybe that's another. But that is certainly what's led to more and more leaders becoming more coach-like.
Yeah. So in terms of coaching, well, you not only are a coach now, you also have decades of experience as a statistician. You have led the methods group at Roche. You have published quite a lot about statistics. You have helped many, many statisticians also on the technical aspects. And so I'm pretty sure you have mentored also quite a lot of people in that regard. So what do you find for you is the difference between mentoring and coaching?
Great question. And before we go on to that, one of the things I should mention, I'm not throwing away my statistics. I'm carrying on helping statisticians and actually doing statistical consultancy alongside my coaching. So those two things will become part of my portfolio within my coaching company. So coming back to your question about the difference between coaching and mentoring, this is an interesting one because lots of people do not know the difference. And to some people, it's not necessarily important. And by the way, coaching is not better than mentoring by any stretch of the imagination. They're both supportive modalities with which people can get new insights and new thinking. I think where the difference lies is the fact that when you're mentoring, you are sharing your experience, your expertise. When you're a coach, you are an expert in coaching. You're not an expert in a person's particular field. So for example, anybody can be a coach. So I can coach. I mean, I'm a statistician, worked in the pharmaceutical industry, but I've coached people outside of the pharmaceutical industry. So for example, I coach somebody who's a design expert, who by the way, designed my logo for my business. I have absolutely zero idea of the design world and what goes on in the design world, but I can still coach that person because the way I coach is non-directive. It's also I'm not knowing. I don't need to be an expert within that field. Whereas in mentoring, there is more of an expert. You know, I know something that you don't, and therefore maybe I can share how I've done something in the past and see how that resonates with people. So it's more of a putting in, whereas coaching is more of a drawing out and trying to get people to think for themselves and move on for themselves. But there's no doubt that both of those modalities are effective. They will make effective statisticians. I'm going to use that with the podcast in mind. they will make more effective people both together. And I personally have had both a coach and a mentor, and incidentally a coach mentor as well. So whilst they're misunderstood in terms of the wordings of them, they're both important modalities to be used by people.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it is helpful to actually have both. Yeah, because for different things, you need different help. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And most of the time, a mentor is a long-term relationship, whereas coaching, you might take coaching for a short period. And I would think to myself, if I've got a coach, I would not want a coach for maybe more than a year. And I don't believe as a coach, you should be coaching people for more than a year in one stretch. It may be 1 to 2 years, but then you need a break from that particular coach and move on to a different coach. Whereas a mentor might be there long term for you. And it might be a certainly different relationship. But you can also have different mentors all at the same time for specific topics. There might be different mentors you use. Similarly, for coaching, there might be different coaches because you resonate better with different coaches.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, mentors, for example, can open doors for you. Yeah,
absolutely.
They can leverage the network. They can kind of, for statisticians, for example, come up with completely different insights. Yeah, because they have more statistical knowledge, more statistical background, these kind of things. And I've seen things like reverse mentoring as well. Yeah, so where a very senior executive, yeah, has a very junior statistician. However, this junior statistician comes with very different insights, kind of how it is currently being a junior statistician in a big organization. What kind of challenges do they have in a day-to-day world? Because executives might be completely kind of removed from that. Yeah, their experience as being a junior statistician can be 2 decades old or more. Yeah, and so what was relevant then is not necessarily relevant now.
And by the way, I completely agree with you with the reverse mentoring, although I would argue it's just mentoring. And one of the things I said earlier on is, I know something you don't know.
Yeah.
Could be, let's take the new statistician in the industry. They're going to come with R skills, for example.
Yeah.
Experienced people like myself might not know. So where do I go to learn my R and get a mentor for R? I go to that person who's just come to the industry, and they can then warm me through. That's not reverse mentoring. That's just mentoring.
Yeah.
So I completely see where you're coming from with that. And I think when you get people that have got less experience, they have that freshness of just being open to new things. And they can, whereas I think we get stuck in our ways when we get later into our career. So yeah, I like this idea of, if you want to call it reverse mentoring, I would just call it mentoring.
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever a situation where you should say, well, that person can't be my mentor because they're not as experienced as me. Well, they might be more experienced in a different sphere, yeah, a different way of thinking. So yes, completely agree with you on that.
Now let's go back to coaching. You obviously rave about coaching, and you've decided to become a full-time coach, and you're now running your own business 100%. And coaching is your dominant area where you want to help people. For you personally, why is it so fulfilling to be a coach?
Oh, why is it fulfilling? And by the way, I'm not going to be 100% coaching. I'm still, like I mentioned before, I'm still going to be doing some statistical consulting.
Yeah, but 100% on your own terms.
100% on my own terms, exactly. I find it fulfilling because it's when you're coaching somebody and you see the shifts in their thinking, and when you get towards the end of it, I mean, I reflect on a coaching session I did quite recently where I asked a very simple question at the end, you know, what have you learned about yourself during this session? And the person just started tears. And I'm like, what's going on? And they just said, they're tears of joy because I've just got some new insights. And it's seeing those new insights. I was in the world of not knowing about those insights, but the fulfilling part of it is seeing a person move from one position to another and gaining that new insight. And then when you talk to them afterwards, you talk to them, you know, after they finish the coaching, they tell you where they've gone on their journey. That is so much more fulfilling. And the one thing that coaching does is it empowers people. It empowers people to come up with their own, I'm not going to use the word solutions because it's not always a solution, but come up with their own new thinking around a particular topic. And that to me is so much more fulfilling than me giving advice. or saying, oh, why don't you do this or do that? Oh, you know, or this is how I would have done it. It's that stepping away from being the focus of the conversation around that partnership between the two people, and then that other, that person, that thinker you're working with, moving towards new thinking on their own terms. And that to me is a fulfilling part of that.
Yeah, I completely can see that. And you've just started also to talk about the benefits of coaching, isn't it? Because people will get new insights, yeah, or new ways of looking at it from their own terms. It's not kind of forced on them. They kind of get it from themselves. And so I guess that makes it much more powerful and also much more attractive for the people to accept it, because I gained the interest or these insights myself. It wasn't kind of advised to be.
Absolutely, they do get. And actually, thinking about advice, there's a fantastic video out there by Michael Bungay Stanier on the advice monster. We all have an advice monster. So, you know, you come to me and say, Alan, I want your fantastic advice. And I jump in there. And meanwhile, you're sitting there going, that's not at all what I wanted. Whereas if you stay curious as a coach, not for your own think, your own understanding, but for the thinker's understanding, to move the thinker forward, you stay out of giving them advice, because the advice at the end of the day might be wrong. You don't know that. You don't know whether the advice is right or wrong. Only the thinker knows whether it's right or wrong. But it is, if we can stay away from giving too much advice, then it empowers them to come up with their own thinking. You said it, their own thinking on their own terms, their new thinking. That's not to say as a coach you don't challenge their thinking. You can challenge their thinking, but you're staying away from giving advice. And you're making them think even more. So if they come up with something that's of their own terms, their own thinking, maybe challenge their thinking. Yeah, what are the blockages? What are the things that could go wrong with this? So they're actually carrying on that thinking, and it's not just in the room that happens. More and more, you'll get a shift in the room with coaching, but the bigger shift after the coaching is completed. And so after they've come out of their coaching conversation, they'll be doing more and more experimentation with new things, and they'll get more and more insights as they go from the coaching room. You're just doing it more as a catalyst to get them to think more and more.
Yeah. I love the term of the advice monster. Yeah. And you said advice could be right or wrong. I can already hear kind of my listener saying, I will never give wrong advice. The problem is you are not the person to judge that. The receiving end is the person to judge that. And so maybe you can live with that your advice can be helpful or not helpful. And you will very often not know whether it's helpful, because you don't have the perspectives of the people that receive the advice. That is really important. Now, there's one other thing. Advice is very often kind of on what to do. Yeah. Now, you mentioned kind of blockers and kind of hurdles that people have. I guess that is very often not with what to do, isn't it?
There's blockers on what to do. There could also be blockers on who.
Okay.
On people. But again, it's not up to you as the coach to tell them what their blockers are. Yeah. Even if you think to yourself, oh, God, I can see that something going wrong there. Actually, it's not up to you to make that call. Mm-hmm. There, coming back to what you said as well, you don't know if your advice is going to be right or wrong. Only they know. What's going to be right or wrong. But in coaching, we don't be directive in that way anyway. We're getting them to think, yeah, what are the hurdles they may come across? And how will they face those hurdles? Just because you think you know how to get over a particular hurdle, the person in front of you, the thinker, might know a different way of getting around that hurdle. They also might have other ways of helping them get over that hurdle as well. Mm-hmm. And just because you know something that they don't, doesn't mean that you have to, your fantastic advice is going to be fantastic.
Let's imagine the scenario. And I think this is a very, very relevant scenario because I have been in discussions about it very, very often. Yeah. So there is this scenario of I'm the statistician. Yeah. And there is on the other side, there is this super experienced clinician. Yeah. They've run a clinic, they have been an external thought leader, they have, you know, decades of more experience, they're 2 decades older than me, and they are so, so confident. And now I really kind of fear talking to them and telling them, you know, that kind of doing it the old way, that he has always done it, yeah, in terms of research, is not the best way. How can I ever do that? Yeah. And there's this lack of confidence that often shines through. Yeah. And maybe that's one hurdle, but you know, could be all kind of different other hurdles. Yeah. So if you're in such a situation, what kind of question would you ask?
Oh, there's several questions coming to mind with that. First of all, I get them to think, well, what is confidence? What's confidence mean to them? What does fear mean to them? You mentioned fear. Yeah. What does fear mean to them? But not only that, where are they feeling that fear in their body? So one of the things with coaching, we a lot of coaching, we're up in the head. A lot of coaches are in the head. Most of the coaching we probably should be doing is more in the body. Mm-hmm. So when we're fearful, where are we feeling that? And what does that feel like? But then maybe trying to move them forward a bit. We don't want to move them forward completely. We do, but we may not be able to move them forward a bit. They can. They're the ones that can move that forward. So, to me, it's a case of unlocking their or helping them unlock their potential and get over that confidence thing. What does confidence mean to them? What could they do to overcome that confidence? What could they do to be closer to this person so they're on a more adult-to-adult conversation as opposed to an adult-child conversation? So that's what you would do as a coach. But again, coming back to what your coaching is not about being directive. It's more about being challenging their current thinking to get them to move a bit. And in coaching, we often become not knowing. So just because you've been through that with yourself, that statistician, yeah, we'll have all been through this, we're not in their situation. We've got to accept that they're in their own situation and we've got to help them come out of that situation if they want to come out of that situation to be more confident in themselves. It's not our job as a coach to say, well, you should do this, you should do this. This is what I did, but why is it not going to work for you?
Yeah.
No, we're coming back to what we are as a coach is being present for them to allow them the time to think. And that's one of the important things with coaching is it gives them a time to explore and to think and to work out their own solutions with, you know, this is a solution situation. Work out their own solutions to become more of a confident person with that experienced clinician.
Yeah. I think that is one of the greatest benefits, I think, in coaching, that mentoring, advising, all really can't do is unlock your potential and unlock these mindset barriers. Yeah, these misunderstandings that we take for granted, or, you know, things that we say or tell ourselves all the time, yeah, which are not helpful.
And you mentioned mindsets there because often within coaching or coaches, there are mindsets we have to get rid of ourselves. And we have to have mindset shifts within ourselves. And one of the biggest mindset shifts I've taken on board is that idea of not knowing. Yeah. Not knowing where the next questions are going to come from, not even knowing what the next questions are going to be, but being present for the thinker there and helping them get to have their own mind shift rather than, well, what's the powerful question that I can ask next? There's no real powerful question. The powerful question comes from the person, not from some bulk of powerful questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is the power is there in the staying present and listening, really, really listening. Not, yeah, as you said, think about the next question, not kind of what kind of good reply you can have, how can you show that you're competent, all these kind of other things. Yeah. But really stay with a person and listen. Truly listening is such a powerful technique that we can learn from great coaches, which we can apply in our professional and even more in our private life. Being fully present with your spouse, your kids, your parents, your friends will make a complete different experience. And I think this is also one of the powerful things from these coaching sessions that you can have. You have a very, very different experience than a typical one-to-one you could have with someone.
And the headlines that you put out there, you know, the idea of being present for someone and not thinking about the next question, but truly, truly listening. And that doesn't mean just listening to the words, it's listening to the music of the conversation, listening to what's going on globally, but maybe also listening in your own head. Am I thinking, well, what's going to come next? What's going to come next? And if I am, it's not a case of trying to force it, but it's a case of, well, okay, I'm hearing that voice. Just let that go. Yep. And be present for that person. So listening is a most important skill within coaching. The other really important skill is the use of silence. Silence is a powerful question. We hate silence in the Western world, but it's really powerful to allow the person in front of you to think. You're still listening, but you're allowing the silence. And particularly when the person's going and they're looking around and you can see them, they're actually still thinking. That's the time not to interrupt. And that's the time not to say anything, but let that silence go. And if they come out of that, you can say, well, where are we now?
Yeah.
One coach said to me, you don't go back into their thinking and say, what was the insight in your thinking? Actually, just ask them to move forward. Coaching's a forward-facing process.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be going back and trying to diagnose what they've already thought about. They've already moved on. Move them on even further, or try and help them move on even further. So listening's a real powerful tool. Silence is a real powerful tool. People will say, well, powerful questions. And I said before, powerful questions, they exist from you. And essentially you're bringing them out. Yeah, when the thinker's thinking, that's when the powerful question will come. You don't have to think, well, I'm going to ask some weird and wonderful question, or I'm going to have to show how fantastic I am at coaching here. No, the powerful question will come from the thinker.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So that also gives us all advice to be better coaches, especially in the situations where we should tame our advice monster and kind of keep it in the background. Listen really carefully, leverage silence, and then let the question appear, not think about it upfront. Yeah, yeah, very good. So if I now want to be coached, how do I find a good coach? Well, besides from just calling you.
It's a great question. And the International Coaching Federation have a page which is called Find a Coach, but I would not necessarily recommend using that. My personal opinion is talk to other people who have been coached. who's their coach? Which coach has resonated with them? And then maybe reach out to that coach and ask them, you know, and set up a call with them. I don't want to use the word chemistry, but I use the word discovery as a call. Set up a discovery call with them and see if you resonate with that person.
Yeah.
But not only that one person, go to several coaches. Don't just go to one person. Go to several and see which person actually resonates better with you. That to me is the most authentic. I mean, most of the work we get as coaches will be recommendations from people we've coached already.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be recommendations from them. They'll recommend somebody else come to us. I learned this from my coach supervisor, that if somebody comes to me for coaching, I will ask them, are you speaking to other coaches? Because it's important that they get the person that resonates well for them.
Yeah.
Because you want to help them move their thinking on.
So,
I mean, that's a long-winded way of answering your question. But like I say, a lot of it comes from recommendations from other people.
Awesome. Yeah, that's where I got my coaches over my career as well.
Teaching.
And yes, I also invested myself in coaching. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of people that will say, well, my company doesn't pay for the coach. I think this is the wrong understanding. Yeah, a coach is investment into yourself. And I think many coaches have basically two different payment terms for private coaching and for company sponsored coaching. So have a rethink that. Yeah, this money what you invest in there can be really, really huge. Yeah. And if you compare it with, let's say, attending a professional conference for a couple of days, traveling abroad, all these kind of other things. Yeah. Coaching has a really, really good cost-benefit ratio from my perspective. What do you think about that topic?
Yes, I completely agree with you, by the way. And yes, there are most coaches, I would say, have what you said, which is basically if a person's paying personally for coaching, they will charge less than if a corporate's paying for the coaching. But coming back to your point, it's an investment in you. And so, yeah, if you're working in the corporate world, coaches may not be a monthly coaching session may not cost that much, but you could also negotiate with a coach. If you're a student, for example, you could negotiate, you know, is there something we could do?
Yep. Yeah,
could we reduce the costs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots more you can think about. And I think as an ethical coach, you would actually do that. You would not necessarily charge somebody who's earning less than, say, a director of a company. You might charge the director of the company more than a student, for example. But I do agree with you. It's for a professional, it's a really important thing to invest in. And why do I say that? One of the things that coaching gives you, and I've had people say this to me, it's the first time in ages that I've been truly listened to. And you give me an hour where I can actually think about something. And a CEO of a business might turn around and go, you're the only person that really challenges me, because everybody that's underneath me is not necessarily challenging me as hard, but you're a coach, you're challenging me. And so it gives that person an hour, maybe if it's once a month, an hour a month where they can really truly think for themselves. And they're not thinking for others. So I think it is a massive investment. Hence the reason why, you know, over my career, I've had a number of coaches, and they've all been really, really useful. And every sort of coaching is useful. So whilst I say that coaching is not better than mentoring, to me it allows you to be more authentically yourself and empowers you more than, say, a mentoring conversation would.
Yeah, just from a cost perspective, an additional insight. Yeah, a break through aha moment for an executive will generate a very, very different amount of money than for a student, at least in the short term. And so I think the value statement is very, very different there, just from financial terms. We're not talking about kind of, you know, it's non-financial terms, but just from a money perspective.
And you mentioned the word value, and that is the most important thing. We have, what is your value? What's the value you're adding as a coach? And yes, if that chief executive of a company gets an important breakthrough that then goes on, it could make them millions, for example. And therefore, you know, what's the cost of a coaching conversation when you weigh it against that? Coming back to your point, though, about is that more valuable than the student having a breakthrough? Again, you do not know that. It may be valuable in monetary terms, but you don't know how valuable that is in terms of their personal, the person and the individual themselves. That student, if you give that student a breakthrough, they have a breakthrough during the coaching session, that might move them on to becoming a CEO, for example. Yeah. You just never know. You don't know. And it's really, you should be in a world of really not knowing. And therefore, it might be a really important thing for them that they can't put money on, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Money is just one part of the overall value statement here.
Absolutely.
It's just that when it comes to you speak with your supervisor, with your finance people, and that definitely will help you to get some convinced.
And it's that return on investment. And there's a number of articles out there around return on investment for coaching. It's not necessarily something that can be, you can put numbers on, for example.
However, I can completely agree for myself. I invested a lot into coaching and was really, really helpful. It helped me to grow personally, overcome lots of personal challenges, and helped me to do things that, well, I didn't believe I could do. So from that point of view, being a great coach, getting a coach, learning more about coaching is definitely something you should invest into. And any final words from you?
Coming on that point, even as a coach, I invest in coaching myself. So I don't just think, well, I'm a coach now, I can do that. I invest in coaching. I invest in coaching supervision and coach mentoring. So to me, it's important to keep my skills sharp as a coach, which is why I invest in the mentoring. It's important for my own perspective to have this coaching supervision as well there. So yeah. That resonates with me. A good coach can really help everything you do.
Yeah. And there are so many things that are unknown to you about yourself that not knowing them really hurts your professional and your personal growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks so much for the great discussion. And just look into the show notes where you can find the links to Alan's homepage, to his LinkedIn profile, and where you can find them both for statistical as well as for coaching services.
Thank you very much, Alexander. Enjoyed the conversation immensely.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS, who help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Please head over to theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes and also much more about the upcoming conference in November, where you can contribute your own research or where you can just register and have fun with it. We have both the free limited access and the paid full access for you to join the conference. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.